Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, and we don't go to hippie concert festivals out in the middle of the deserts. And we're glad we're not doing that. Not that we ever did that. But there might have been a time earlier when we were tempted to do something like that.
Nah.
No, nah. You never thought you would attend the Burning Man Festival?
No.
Have you heard the news?
I like washing my body.
Okay. Anyway, it is a festive weekend here at the Weekly Worldview because we've been watching the weather out in Black Rock City, Nevada, where the Burning Man attendees all gathered Friday for their giant pagan satanic festival. And on Friday night, a storm dumped torrential rain and dropped temperatures into the freezing levels. You didn't know? There in the playa, which is I should have written down exactly what it is. It's basically like toxic mud, super acidic, horrible, awful, toxic dirt. And then now that it's been saturated with water, it's actually dangerous. Especially when you're a half intoxicated, well, fully intoxicated, half naked hippie. Rolling around in the soupy mud pit there on the playa. 73,000 people are trapped there because the roads in and out are closed and the airport is closed. And the only way the hippies can get out is to walk out. And it's 5 miles, I think, to the closest road where they might see a car. It's out in the middle of nowhere. Anyway, I have a report that the Burning Man attendees, they referred to themselves as burners, appropriately enough, as in it's a preview to their eternal destiny. The burners, on a Friday night and into Saturday morning, prayed to the playa gods to make the rain stop. They did. Wow. Yeah, and then that was Friday night into Saturday morning, and then Saturday there was more rain during the day. And then Sunday, today, as we went to air, it was raining again. There's like a river of rain. If you look at the radar, there's a river of rain flowing from the southwest to the northeast over the playa. So the playa gods apparently were not. I was going to say they were not satiated, but you're probably right. They weren't paying attention. That's probably more accurate in that they don't exist. So yeah. Oddly enough, burners there posted pictures on Saturday of a rainbow that appeared after the giant torrential rainstorm, and they attributed the rainbow to God. Oddly enough, right? In the middle of your pagan, satanic, drug-infested festival, something horrible happens. You see a rainbow, and you can't help but attribute it to God and assume that something good is about to happen. It's just ironic, that's all. Now, so far, there is only one person reportedly dead, and that is likely due to a drug overdose or a vaccine-related heart attack. So far, the actual rainstorm and toxic mud is not the official cause of death of anyone out there. And we certainly hope everyone out there survives, but we hope it is as uncomfortable and difficult and miserable a situation as possible without killing you so that you might learn your lesson. I saw pictures of people easily in their 40s and 50s, grown adult people. Just acting like a bunch of Philistines. It was bizarre. And I guess this happens every year they do this festival. I know I've reported on it before. It's a sign of the times, so to speak. There was a time when open pagan worship, you just didn't do that. I mean, even if you weren't a Christian person, you still had enough respect for decency not to, well, anyway, those are days gone by. Okay, so we move now into the, oh, well, we have an update from last week. Last week, we reported on two women shot at the Chicago White Sox game. And we reported that the Chicago Shot Spotter system, that's the system of microphones all over the Chicago metro area, so that when there's gunfire, the police can tell approximately where it came from. It's called Shot Spotter. The Shot Spotter had detected gunfire from an apartment complex where there is always constantly gunfire. And so the police had attributed the shooting of the women to just an incidental, hey, you happen to be in Chicago, you were hit by gunfire. It's not that surprising. It came from the apartment complex where, you know, the gunfire always comes from. Well, it turns out that was not the case. The Shot Spotter data was accurate. There was gunfire at the apartment complex approximately a mile or so from Chicago White Sox Stadium, which I don't know the name of the stadium, but you know what I'm talking about. It's where the White Sox play baseball. Well, it turns out that one of the two gunshot victims at that White Sox game last week, she snuck the gun in past metal detectors, hiding the gun in the folds of her belly fat. Yeah, she snuck the gun in. So a couple questions immediately come to mind. Number one, why are you sneaking a pistol into a baseball game? I mean, maybe I don't live in Chicago, but if I did, I would want to have a gun on me all the time. And it's quite possible that this poor woman, she's scared because people get shot all the time. And so she felt like she needed a gun. And they told her that the White Sox Stadium was a gun-free zone. And she decided to sneak one in anyways. Now the gun just accidentally discharged, apparently. And that grazed the aforementioned belly of the 26-year-old woman who snuck the gun in. Is it sneaked? Because here in the article, the urinalists used the word snuck. Uh-oh. And that's the word I use, but that's just my public school white trash background showing through. Mm-hmm. I believe it should be sneaked.
Yeah.
Yeah. The same. Yeah, these urinalists matriculated in the same government schools I did. And so they said snuck. Anyway, the gun accidentally discharged, grazing the aforementioned belly of the 26-year-old woman who sneaked it in. And that bullet then subsequently struck a 42-year-old woman in the leg. She ended up in the hospital. The woman who snuck the gun in, she refused medical treatment and just tried to get out of the area, is what she was trying to do. Now, the second question that comes to mind is, can belly fat defeat a metal detector? Apparently it can. If you have a thick enough layer of belly fat, you can sneak a gun past a metal detector. I did not know that. That's news to me. And that's probably when you need to look in the mirror and decide maybe I need to make a change. I have enough belly fat to defeat a metal detector. That's got to be some sort of metric that you might want to pay attention to. Okay, now back to the Shot Spotter. The Shot Spotter, of course, assumed that the apartment complex was the source. But what are the odds that you could find gunfire around Chicago within any given 5-minute period if you look around? So they went to the cops. They said she was hit by gunfire at 7:05 p.m. Was there any gunfire in Chicago? And they were like, well, yeah. As a matter of fact, there was all over Chicago. Let's just find, was there any gunfire that could have made it to the stadium? And they just narrowed it down. And so the Shot Spotter system obviously was worth the $11.5 million or whatever they spent on it, because it was able to tell them that there is gunfire all over Chicago and some that is adjacent to the stadium and all of that. Now, so from Chicago, let's go to California, where we have a report sent to us from our Alaska Bureau. It ends up in the Just Ironic file. An Emeryville, California city councilman. Emeryville, by the way, is up in the Northern California area. in Alameda County, a notoriously leftist, communist, socialist county. The seat of satanic communist power in Northern California. Well, one of the seats, Alameda County. It includes Oakland and Berkeley, all like that. Well, an Emeryville City councilman was in the city's mall speaking with local business owners about the impact of burglaries and thefts on their business. Why? He wanted to understand what they were going through. Because he's there to help. While he was there helping, someone robbed his bike bag. So he was robbed while talking to store owners about being robbed, which is why this ends up from the Florida, the Alaska Bureau into the Just Ironic file. Now, the city councilman reported when he was asked about being robbed, they said, what was in your bike bag? What did they get? He said, quote, they're not going to get much from it. I'm on a politician's budget, unquote. At which nobody got that joke. It's like, what? You're on a politician's. Politicians spend unlimited amounts of other people's money. How much other people's money was in your bike bag, Mr. Politician, that they may have made off with? So we don't understand the joke, because a joke, in order to be funny, has to have some element of truth. And a politician on a low budget, it just doesn't work. So you need to get back with your writers and have them come up with some new material. Then again, all the writers are on strike. Maybe he's writing his own material. That's the problem. Now, the district attorney in Emeryville, Alameda County in general, I do believe, is facing a recall because she's a communist plant from George Soros and his whole Overthrow America insurrectionist DA project. So they're trying to recall her. And you may remember Emeryville in the news. It has a population of under 13,000 people. But despite that, it was the scene of a mob of teenagers that entered a Bath and Body Works and terrified the staff so much that they locked themselves in a storeroom, fearing for their lives from the mob in a little town, Emeryville. The scene resulted in shots being fired and at least one person being stabbed. Unfortunately, no one in the mob, as far as we know, was punished appropriately, which when there's a mob, the appropriate punishment is for law enforcement to open fire. And that did not occur. But that needs to occur. And I predict that in the not too distant future, it will occur. That there will be a mob and the police will be so terrified for their own lives that they'll have to open fire. And that's when the light will go on with law enforcement. They'll say, wow, all we have to do is start shooting and the riots end immediately. Wow. Imagine that. Shazam! Who would have thought? All right, speaking of rioters and the insurrection, insurrectionists if insurrectionists who are running the city of Denver, Colorado, have reached a settlement with BLM activists. Activists? These are the activists who rioted in the streets in the summer of 2020 and made the city of Denver, Colorado look like a third world hellhole. Infested with graffiti and feces. And I drove through Denver in the summer of 2020. I was astonished at what had happened. The riot, the destruction, the broken windows. It was horrible. Well, the city of Denver arrested 300 people during the riots. Well, a number of them have sued the city of Denver, and the insurrectionist communists running the city of Denver have now settled with them and agreed to pay them about $5 million. Not only are the communist insurrectionist fellow travelers in the government in Denver going to pay the insurrectionists about $5 million, they also have issued a promise that they will never again enforce future curfews against rioters. Now, they use the term protesters, but they mean rioters because that's what the topic was here, was rioting. Not protesting, not demonstrating. I've done that. I've never broken a window. Never set anything on fire. Never struck another human being with malice. This was a riot. And the city of Denver, by the way, let's see, it's according to amgreatness.com. The city agreed to a settlement, they say, in order to avoid the burdensome and expensive costs of going to trial. And there's some truth to that, because that's why these settlements happen, is to pad the wallets of the lawyers involved while enabling them to work as little as possible. But make no mistake about it, this is a straight-up payoff, and this has been going on in Denver for at least 10 years, where the communists and the government pay off the insurrectionists in the streets, and the money, at least a good portion of it, ends up back in the politicians' pockets right there in Denver. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thanks for hanging with us through the first break, ladies and gentlemen. Through the stories and tales of armed conflict and insurrection in America's cities. That takes us to the Justice System file, where the mayor out there in Chicago, don't recall his name. It seems like it was a pit bull faced woman there for a while, and she got replaced by an even more communist leftist, which is hard to believe. He's even more, yeah. Wow. Brandon is his name. We'll just call him Brandon. Brandon, the mayor of Chicago, is suing automakers. That's right. Why? He says that Kia and Hyundai, they're making cars that are too easy to steal. Yes, that's right. According to Brandon, the failure on the part of Kia and Hyundai to install auto theft prevention technology is negligence. And it is resulting in a citywide and nationwide crime spree that has been unfolding right before our eyes, the mayor said. As if he has to tell us that it's right before our eyes. It's right before our eyes, mayor. You don't have to remind us. Especially the people who've had their cars stolen. So he's suing them because Chicago reported more than 21,000 vehicle thefts in 2021. I'm sorry, in 2022. That is up 50% from 2021. Wow. So he's suing. How is he allowed to do this? Because all sanity in the justice system and the legal system in general has been cast aside in favor of allowing anyone to offer any legalistic argument about anything at any time, as long as the lawyers involved can make money. And that's the public and the private lawyers, all of them. It's just, this should be laughed out of court on its face, never allowed to even come to court. The judge should be allowed to slap the mayor in his face and tell him to get out of my courtroom with that. But he's not. They're actually going to take this seriously. Now, the superintendent of the Chicago police, he says that law enforcement is doing everything they can to prevent these thefts. But he says these vehicle companies must be held accountable. So he's got the superintendent of the police going along with the mayor. Oh, he's the interim superintendent. Okay, so maybe that's pretty sad when you go along with sheer lunacy in hope of securing a bureaucratic position in the government. Talk about a pathetic life. Your mom and dad must be really disappointed. Mr. Fred Waller, interim superintendent of the Chicago Police. Yeah, he says law enforcement is doing everything we can to prevent these thefts. Note to Fred Waller, superintendent there, it's not law enforcement's job to prevent thefts. No, it's the prosecutor's job. The prosecutors and the judges are supposed to prevent thefts by making thieves terrified to steal things. How do they do that? Swift, sure justice against thieves. And that way, Mr. Waller, you could resign and get a real job producing something of real value in the private sector. You wouldn't have to be a tick on the buttocks of the government there in Chicago. All right. I think that's all I have for that. That's all. We two parasites, Mayor Brandon and fellow tick Fred Waller there in Chicago. And that takes us out of Chicago. We'll go to Minnesota. Why? Because it's still summertime. If it was wintertime, we wouldn't go either place. We wouldn't get within 500 miles of Chicago or Minnesota, except in late August, early September, because otherwise it's freezing. Yeah, you have to be crazy. No. I'm sure people born and raised there, they just love it, and that's fine. I mean, someone has to subdue the land there. I'm glad it's not me. All right. So in Minnesota, we find reason number 667 to withdraw from the culture. This is a new list This is a new serial segment. Reasons to withdraw from the culture altogether, permanently and completely. Because in Minnesota, they have the Walker Art Center. The Walker Minnesota Art Center is there in Walker, Minnesota, as you could well imagine. They had an event over the past few weeks at the Minneapolis Sculpture Garden. Oh, it's in Minneapolis. It must be named after a guy named Walker. That's a guy who saw Minneapolis, and then he just kept walking because he was like, are you crazy? I'll freeze to death here. No, I don't know who Walker was, but there's an art center in Minneapolis dedicated to Mr. Walker, and there's a sculpture garden there. And part of the Walker Center's Free First Saturdays program featured an artist whose name I will not mention because I don't want to give this pervert any publicity at all. This pervert came into the Walker Art Center with a program, and the artist said that this is a playful demon summoning session for families. Playful demon summoning. Kind of like Burning Man. You know, it's all playful until the mud turns toxic. Families are invited. Let me get back to Minnesota. Quote, this is the, what is this? This is the website explaining the playful demon session. Quote, families are invited to create a vessel to trap the demon that knows them best, perhaps like the demon of overthinking, and then participate in a playful ceremony to summon and befriend their demon. And so the family-friendly, what would you call this? Exercise, I guess? It's couched as a self-help experience, you know, with a playful demon motif. You know, your demon, overthinking, procrastination, worry. It's a demon. We gotta get those demons out. So they couch this as a play on demon, right? Well, the description goes on. After designing your trap for your demon, Lilith, the empathetic demon, will come from the dark side of the moon to lead you in locating your feelings using ancient Babylonian techniques. This collective and playful demon summoning session will conclude with a somatic movement meditation designed to help you befriend your shadows. It's all in good fun. Now, the exhibition, of course, parts with historical gender binarism and blah, blah, blah. It goes on to just talk about Lilith, which is a traditional deep, which is an actual demon. It's anciently acknowledged as an actual demon. Lilith is a demon. They go on and on about demons. The Walker Art Center has received millions of dollars in taxpayer funding through Minnesota's Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Of course, the people of Minnesota are paying for this, and they're probably attending because, you know, all restraint has been thrown off. Apparently, you're allowed to just go wild in the streets, cover yourself with tattoos and strip off your clothes and run around like a mad pagan, for crying out loud. And the only thing that can stop you is a deluge, like out there in the desert in Black Rock City. If it wasn't for the deluge at Burning Man, those people would be defiling and corrupting each other to the depths of the deepest hell right now. It's a giant pagan drug fest, pervert, anyway, but it's stopped. It didn't happen this weekend, and we're thankful for that. Now, but let's go into the big die file. By the way, Jimmy Buffett is dead. Leftist, God-hating heathen who helped encourage a generation to defile themselves with drunkenness and stupidity and amusement instead of paying attention to what was going on, has died. And he's now, after enjoying a relatively short period of being drunk on the beach in Key West, now he's going to spend eternity burning in hell forever. So let that be an example to everyone who is wasting away in Margaritaville or whatever you're doing out there. Jimmy Buffett's in hell. No margaritas in hell. All right, from the big die file. We now have scientific confirmation, for whatever that's worth anymore, right? You always have to put a little asterisk by that anymore because nobody's really sure of anything that calls itself science any longer, and that's unfortunate. But we do have a study that reports data that vaccination against COVID-19 causes a marked decrease in immunity to heterologous pathogens. That means common pathogens that we all come into contact with every day, all day. Various viruses, bacteria, and fungi that are all everywhere in our environment. Children who are vaccinated with this, which one was it? Was it the, let's see, it was the Pfizer vax, the mRNA vax. Kids vaccinated with the Pfizer vax have a decreased immunity to stuff that can make them sick. Stuff that's all around us that makes us. So they call this acquired immune deficit, and it is now being colloquially referred to as VADS, meaning vaccine acquired immune deficiency syndrome. So it's like AIDS, but it's from the vaccine, and instead of being amongst perverted, self-indulgent heathens, it's amongst innocent children who are forced to get a vaccine by their negligent parents, their negligent, terrified, hysterical parents, and the criminally malevolent governing conspiracy of a criminally insane sex cult that sees the government in the midst of the greatest failure of courage in the face of a potential crisis in the history of America, anyway, if not the world. And this is sad. Lots of people are going to die because they got scared and took this experimental shot. And this looks like pretty good data to me. I'm not an expert. I don't claim to be an expert because that's embarrassing anymore. I don't want to be lumped in with them. But the study was titled COVID-19 Vaccination in Children Alters Cytokine Responses to Heterologous Pathogens and Toll-like Receptors Toll-like receptor agonist. This was published in a secular journal. I'm not seeing it, and I suppose I could link to it. I don't have where it was published. So I will put this link in the show summary because hopefully it's just to a study and not a bunch of pervy English porn links on it. So if I can link to it, I will, because I did not write down where the study was published. All right. Many specific immune reactions declined in children by a factor of over 10 times. That means their immune response to common things that can make them sick was reduced, in some cases, by up to 10 times. And that means a lot of kids are going to get sick. And I'm thinking a lot of people are going to get... You know why it's only... They say only about half the kids... It's probably because, fortunately, the vaccine had to be maintained in the dry ice, and there was the you had to be really careful with it, and chances are we screwed it up half the time. Fortunately, half the vaccines administered were not administered or handled properly, and so they didn't deliver their deadly payload to the unfortunate, hapless people I was watching a bit of the U.S. Open at lunch, And I noticed that Novak Djokovic is at the U.S. Open again because he waited them out. And again, it's just sad that so many people, especially innocent young kids, didn't even have the opportunity to wait out the hysterics, and now they'll have to pay the price. You and I am host Doug McBurney. Welcome back. And let's see, that was the poor children victimized. Yeah. It defies comprehension what happened there in my mind. It just defies. But let's move on. As much as we can. We'll go into the Death After Roe file. That's right. Death After Roe, where I have an Axios report. Axios being a left-wing, millennial-run, child-oriented news source. So it's all written at about a third-grade level. Anyway, they report that telehealth abortions in Colorado have risen to 20% of all abortions in the state of Colorado, and that's nearly three times the national average of 7%. National average for telehealth abortions, which is where you get an abortion pill over the online, that you do a Zoom call and you get your abortion pill. Well, they skyrocket in Colorado because, well, Colorado's just pretty tech savvy. Kids there, they know how to work around on the interweb and stuff. Axios reports that most medication abortions occur within the first 9 weeks of pregnancy, though some providers work with patients up to 13 weeks. And the cost of a medication abortion starts at about $150, which is a lot less than the old clunky surgical, inconvenient surgical abortion that involved with the hands-on and the blood and, yeah. So now it's $150 to take a pill. And most medication abortions, which that is about as Orwellian a word as you can get. Medication abortion. Wow. Talk about cognitive dissonance. To hold that concept in your mind, those two words together, that will drive you insane eventually because they are against one another. Medication is to help you get better. Abortion is to kill you. And so by infecting people's minds with a term like that, you ensure their eventual insanity. Unless God or someone can get through to them and shake them out of it. It's diabolical is what it is. Okay, now, as I was saying, most of these poison pill abortions occur within the first 9 weeks, some up to 13 weeks. So the good news here, folks, is that fortunately, these are mostly pro-life abortions. I mean, according to most of the pro-life organizations and the pro-life industry professionals who draw the line at the first trimester, and they call that civilized, they call that, well, they call anything beyond the first trimester as radical. And so these are pro-life abortion. The first trimester, by the way, is 12 weeks. So the pro-life industry would like you to know that the 13 weeks abortions, those violate the non-radical pro-life abortions. So abortions at 13 weeks, they should make you mad. A 13-week abortion is not a pro-life abortion. Let's be clear about that. Now, in some states, the pro-life abortion line is drawn even earlier at the detection of a heartbeat, which could be as little as 6 weeks. So in some states, abortions after 6 weeks should make you upset, and at the very least, they should make you want to donate to a pro-life organization like Operation Rescue or National Right to Life to try to move your state toward more pro-life abortions. Because they know which abortions are pro-life abortions in your state. And they can help you know when abortions are pro-choice. You know, Democrat abortions. Those are bad abortions. Those pro-choice abortions, those Democrat abortions, those should make you mad. So there you have it in the death after Roe file from Colorado. From there, we go to Oregon for the doping of America, which, of course, where would you go for the doping of America other than Oregon? Unless you were in Colorado, maybe you would just stay there. A majority of residents in Oregon now say that they wish they hadn't voted for the 2020 ballot initiative that decriminalized hard drugs. And by hard drugs, they mean drugs like heroin and cocaine and methamphetamine. Drugs that can kill you on the spot. Those were all decriminalized in 2020 during the, or I believe following the summer of lawlessness, in which all restraint was thrown off publicly, which is very dangerous. And that happened in front of our eyes, in front of God and everybody in the summer of 2020. All restraint to criminal behavior was thrown off in public, and it was allowed to stand. And now that it's been allowed to stand, we're now reaping the fruits of it. And there in Oregon, they don't like it so much. A recent poll says 56% prefer to now repeal the decriminalization of hard drugs. Listen to this. Speaking of an Orwellian name, the Drug Addiction Treatment and Recovery Act. Aren't you for drug addiction treatment and you support recovery, right? So this is the Drug Addiction Treatment and Recovery Act. It's for that. They were told there in Oregon, and they were all so stoned that they believed it. It passed, by the way, with about 60% of the vote, at least 60% of the fake vote as it was counted in 2020. So it probably means 20% of the people in Oregon actually were wasted out enough to vote for this thing. Anyway, this Drug Addiction Treatment and Recovery Act, in pursuit of drug addiction treatment and recovery, decriminalized street drugs. Sure, yeah, that makes total sense. It also allegedly channeled hundreds of millions of dollars into treatment options. Advocates promised a new progressive approach to addressing drug addiction. That's right, recovery services, peer support, and stable housing. Treatment through humane, cost-effective healthcare approaches, you know. Don't treat them like criminals. That's just so mean. And also, money from the state's marijuana tax was going to be redirected to recovery services. So, it's an obviously double-minded flim-flam foisted upon the hapless morons in Oregon via democracy. You can't allow people shooting up heroin in the street to vote You can't allow people making money off the drug trade to run the elections. For crying out loud. Anyway, this is one more means of poisoning the minds of the citizenry to accept communism. Is get them all hooked on drugs, for crying out loud. Then they'll be compliant communists. It's tragic, just tragic. They were going to use the marijuana tax. All right. There you go. That's the doping of America coming to you live out of Oregon in real time. From there, we go to the death penalty file down in the state of Alabama. They're getting ready to execute a prisoner by making him breathe pure nitrogen. Pure nitrogen, I said. That's right. We reported on this guy. I'm not going to mention his name, but the killer was convicted in 1989 for the 1988 murder. A for-hire killing of a preacher's wife. You remember we reported on this guy. They tried to kill him last year, but they couldn't find a vein to insert an IV into his veins. And so instead of just picking him up off the bed, taking him out back and shooting him in the head, because I'm not sure why they didn't do that, but they didn't. And so now they're trying to execute him via nitrogen hypoxia, because whatever they do, they don't want him to suffer in any way. But opponents of the execution by nitrogen hypoxia have argued that it is a form of human experimentation. Well, if you're going to experiment on anyone, why shouldn't it be someone convicted of murder? I'm just putting the question out there for debate and discussion, because if a guy's been convicted of murder, he has no rights. He has no right to life. So he has no rights. Maybe you could give a guy like that the opportunity to submit himself to some experiment so that he could contribute something of value to society before he departs this earth for the great white throne judgment. Or perhaps give him an opportunity to submit to an experiment and he ends up hearing the gospel and he ends up getting saved and repenting. And it's possible, right? So better than arguing over how to put him to death as gently as possible, I say scare the hell out of him before we kill him. Anyway, Alabama is, yeah, okay. So there you go. This guy, they're supposed to execute him sometime in November. We'll have an update, hopefully, at some point in the not-too-distant future. Meanwhile, there's a sorority out there in, where is this? Oh, I always hate it when I do this. Wyoming? A sorority in Wyoming, which I guess they have colleges in Wyoming. Okay. University of Wyoming, as a matter of fact. Well, they all voted to admit transgendered men. But then when one actually showed up, he was 6'2", 260 pounds, and he scared everybody. And so girls who actually had to share a dorm with him, they filed a lawsuit saying, wait a second, we want to be nice and everything and tolerant, and we accept and love and encourage transgender people, but did you see this giant 6'2", 260-pound guy? He scares us. Please make it so he won't come to our dorm. Right? Well, Judge Alan Johnson dismissed their case, and he stated that redefining a woman is a bedrock right of a private voluntary organization, and he says the court may not invade that right. And while he was making his judgment, the judge used the preferred pronouns of the giant 6'2", 260-pound guy who wants to move into the girls' dorm there in the University of Wyoming. The court said, Judge Johnson, will not define a woman today. They will not. And so normally you would say, well, you don't really have to because, you know, we all know what a woman is. But they're at the court that day and this, they don't know. And if they keep denying it, eventually they won't know. The judge pointed out that while sorority bylaws state that a new member shall be a woman, no bylaw actually defines what a woman is. That's right. So I think they also said that they could identify as a woman. I thought I read that. Oh, here it is. No. Yes, it's as I thought. The University of Wyoming chapter voted to admit, and more broadly, the sorority of hundreds of thousands across the country approved language. A woman or someone who identifies as a woman, right? But when the guy actually showed up, well, okay, then things suddenly change. Seven sorority sisters had filed a lawsuit against Kappa Kappa Gamma over the tranny because they were going to actually have to share a room with him and maybe share a bathroom with him. So it wasn't until the tranny was actually threatening to move in and put his shaving gear up on the sink there that the girls, they were like, wait, this is now more than an academic exercise. We're a little uncomfortable. Wait a second. We're actually afraid. Wait a second. Could someone help us and define a woman? And when they go to court, they find out, no, we can't help you. Say hey! Hey! Wild View. And I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and we exit the deranged, insane courtroom there in Wyoming, of all places. I mean, not San Francisco. No, not Miami. Not New York. Not Los Angeles. Wyoming. Where the judge says, no, we can't define that. From there, we go to the end of the world file, where a judge ordered Brandi Hutchins to surrender her son to his father in a custody dispute. There was a custody dispute. Why? Because they are divorced. And the ex-husband came down to Florida to appear in court with her because she did not appropriately turn over custody of their son. So Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd said that she was instructed to show up and give up custody to him by 6 p.m. on a certain day, and she failed to show up. So the Polk County Sheriff sent deputies to find her so she would comply with the order, and what they discovered was they discovered that Hutchins had murdered her 10-year-old child and her 19-year-old child and then shot herself. That's the end of the world for the kids and for her. That's it. And this is the nature of divorce and custody in America today, where when all restraint has been publicly thrown off and you receive a judgment that violates your personal desires, there's no longer anything restraining you from exercising what you perceive to be the proper adjudication for your personal desires, up to and including murder, suicide. Just horrible. The boy's father posted to Facebook about his son's death, which is incomprehensible. It's incomprehensible that you would post that to Facebook. But I suppose he has no shame. I was waiting for the GoFundMe link. Just unbelievable. The sheriff issued a statement saying that the sheriff's office deals with many court orders that rarely end in such a devastating way. Rarely. Not never. In fact, more and more regularly lately. Now, I added that last part just based on what I observe in the news every week. But the sheriff, I'm sure the sheriff realizes that as well. The sheriff said that this all happened because mom did not want to turn the child over to the rightful father pursuant to the court order. Well, that's not why this happened. There was little, if anything, right in this case, sheriff. There was little, if anything, right. And the fact that there was a court order, that was just the final straw. This story is a tribute to America since no-fault divorce. That's what that is. That's the fruit that you harvest from the seeds planted with the declaration that anyone could divorce anyone for any reason as long as they were willing to split the money or pay the right amount of money or however you want to put it. From there, we go to reason number 2037 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. A federal court in Maryland has issued an opinion that parents cannot opt their kids out of LGBTQ plus content in the government schools. And now this is specifically for the government schools in Montgomery County, Maryland. The parents there were looking to opt out of LGBT-themed readings in elementary school. And the court said, no, you may not. Journalists at Not the Bee, where I pulled this article down, say it's already bizarre and creepy that we're teaching sexualities to very young children. It doesn't seem unreasonable to let parents shield their kids from it, they said at Not the Bee, at which point I'm like, are you guys out of your mind? So it's not just bizarre and creepy that we're teaching sexuality to young children. It's criminal, is what it is. It's not creepy. But I guess anymore, it's not criminal. It's just, it creeps some people out. Well, if it's not criminal, then it's not creepy to some people. And so the urinalists at Just the Bee need to realize that this needs to be declared criminal, and there needs to be a criminal offensive taken against these people. And it's to think it's unreasonable for parents to shield their kids, you should be shouting to parents, get out of the school. Are you crazy? If they're teaching that in the school, don't send your kid within a 500 miles of that school. But the folks at Just the Bee don't understand, because they've all been educated that it is government's job to tolerate a certain level of crime. A certain level of criminal behavior has been legal for the entire lives of all these kids at Not the Bee. Oh, and me too, by the way. But we should know better. Those of us who have access to the mind of Christ and the Holy Scriptures should be able to warn these people that no, we can't tolerate any level of certain things. And not even a little bit. But they don't know. The judge who said that parents cannot opt out of the molestation of their children claimed that parents' right to direct their children's upbringing by opting out is not a fundamental right. And the judge is correct. If you drop your kids off at the government schools and give them permission to educate your child, you have abandoned your fundamental right to educate your child. So you should just shut up. And the judge is just acting on what the judge has been educated to believe. And so stop making the judge right. Stop. Just leave the schools. Get out. Take responsibility for your own kids' education and stop whining to me about how hard it is. And how you might have to... All right, I'm just going to leave it aside. The judge went on and said the parents in this case, quote, are not pressured into violating their religious beliefs in order to obtain the benefits of a public education. That's right. You're attaining benefits, right? Deny that. Yeah. So if you want the government cheese, you got to eat the mold with the cheese. That's all. To be outraged at this point is a sign that you've been asleep for at least 20 years. Or you're just naive, or you're a fool. Get your children out of the temple of Molech. Get your child out of the temple of Baal if you don't want them forced to bend the knee. That's all. Meanwhile, reason number 2038 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. The California Department of Public Health has awarded a couple million dollars to a nonprofit called Gender Spectrum to develop concrete strategies for applying the lens of gender diversity to school practices. That's a grant from the state of California. It's a grant intended for, I'm not sure what it's intended for. Actually, I know exactly what it's intended for. It's to corrupt the minds and pollute the minds of the youth and, if possible, arrange for teachers to be able to actually molest the kids. That's what it's actually for. But they say that it's to help... just what I just said. Facilitate the molestation of children. I don't have to explain what this is all about. Part of the program states... It's not always the case that caregivers are supportive of their child's gender, their gender journey. Mm-hmm. In that case, if parents are not supportive, then that's not necessarily someone who will be a part of the gender support team. Who's the gender support team? That's the adults hoping to molest the child. That's the gender support team. And the parent may be excluded if they don't support the corruption and molestation of their child, which makes sense, right? Because if you want to corrupt the mind and molest the child and someone's against you and they might have power against you, you want to keep them off the team. The group's manager of family and educational programming, interesting, said that youth are on a gender journey, and their genders will likely change over time, but parents should affirm those identities unless those identities appropriate a racial, ethnic, religious, or disability group that they are not a part of. So the hypocrisy proves that this isn't really about being able to be whoever you want to be. Because the pervert says there are some things you can't be, like you can't pretend you're an Indian. I'm sorry. You can't pretend you're a Native American. You can't pretend you're a disabled African American. But if you're a boy, you can pretend you're a girl. Because this isn't really about being whoever you want to be. This is about them turning you into what they want you to be, which is their communist slave. So the sheriff should be kicking down the doors of Gender Spectrum and the California Department of Health and any school involved and any governing official who had anything to do with anything at all to do with anything to do with that. That's what should be happening. But all restraint has been cast off, and the fruit is being reaped. Do I want to do the Pope is a communist? I think that's I think we all know the Pope is a communist. But maybe that's the last. The communist Pope has said that. Let's see here, Pope Francis of Assisi. How's that? Pope Francis of Assisi says that we need to listen to science and institute a rapid and equitable transition to the end of the era of fossil fuel, says the Pope, as if he knows anything about fuel or fossils or anything at all to do with, yeah, what, really? I mean, I know that we saw Mitch McConnell freeze up again this week, and we were all reminded that we're basically being pulled over the cliff by a bunch of octogenarian half-wits, of which Pope Francis of Assisi is one. So why is anybody listening to this guy? Oh, he's got the hat. I forgot. That's right. There was the smoke and the whole to a priesthood that doesn't even exist, that's not supposed to exist, and it's led the church for 1,000 years. I mean, isn't that a red flag with anyone? The whole, with the statues and the bloody crucifixes and the worship of the saints. Why does anybody listen to pay any attention to any of this? Oh, that's right. They own an awful lot of real estate, and they control massive amounts of wealth. I forgot about that part. Yeah. It's all very spiritual. Should I go on? Okay, just for entertainment and just to point out the absurd to elucidate the absurd by referring to absurdity, the Pope says it's absurd to permit the continued fossil fuel infrastructures, injustice toward the poor and children who will bear the worst effects of climate change. Predatory industries, says Pope Francis of Assisi. He says predatory industries are depleting and polluting our fresh water, fracking, unchecked mega mining processes, and intensive animal farming. Richer nations have contracted an ecological debt that must be paid. There it is, your sins. You got to pay for your sins, all of you, right? It's a collective guilt, and there's your communism right there. The Pope says we need to stand with the victims of environmental and climate injustice, put an end to the senseless war against creation, and repent of our ecological sins. There we go. So the one thing you notice throughout the Pope's missive is the grains of truth throughout it, right? He talks about depleting and polluting water. There's some of that going on. He talks about mega mining projects. There's some of that going on that's probably out of bounds, you know. There's intensive animal farming. Some of the things they do with the giant processed animal farms. There's some truth to that. A senseless war against creation. There's a grain of truth to that. We're denying that a man is a man and a woman is a woman. That's a senseless war against creation. So grains of truth throughout. Just like the communists always do. They sprinkle their poison with just enough truth to bamboozle the naive and the children and the fellow travelers who want to acquire wealth and power alongside them. That's what it's really about. And Pope Francis of Assisi sits atop a pile of wealth and power that has been irresponsibly and destructively exercised over people seeking the truth of Jesus Christ for far too long, and it's about time to throw that off. All right, and that's why we're here at the Weekly Worldview, and should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.